Today I'd like to talk a little bit more about the Buddha's teaching on freedom. In the meditation practice that we follow, our goal is to attain freedom. And for meditators who come for a short time, who have time enough to finish the foundation course or time even to finish the advanced course, we expect that they should at the very least be able to get a taste of freedom, that they should be able to realize for themselves what it means to be free, even on a small scale, even just a taste. And so it's important to understand what we mean by the word freedom in Buddhism. Of course, when we hear the word freedom in the West, or in the modern world, in the throughout the world really, we generally think about freedom to. Freedom to say, freedom to act, freedom to think, in whatever way we like, in whatever way appeals to us, in whatever way we think fit. And so we think being truly free is being able to think whatever it is you intend to think, holding whatever views you think appropriate, thinking whatever thoughts you think appropriate, and not having anyone else tell you that you're wrong, or not have anyone else try to stop you from thinking and believing what you will. And we think of freedom as saying whatever it is that you like to say. We feel free when we speak, that we can say whatever we want without any punishment. Whatever we want to say, we can say, and this is freedom. Or we can do whatever we like to do. And we think of this as a sort of a freedom, but if we look at how it plays out, really, we, in the end, are none of us free to do or say or think what we will. That our thoughts and our speech and our actions are all defined by an innate character, which is based on our desire, our likes and our dislikes, our beliefs and our delusions and our conditioning, social conditioning, parental conditioning, religious conditioning. And we find ourselves trapped in our freedom. So we say, I have the freedom to believe whatever I like to believe, but actually our beliefs come from something which we really have no control over. Come from our parents, or come from our upbringing, come from our society, come from the media, and so on. And moreover, come from our own desires and aversions. When we want something, we create all sorts of beliefs as to why we deserve to get what we want. I deserve to have this, I deserve to have that. And when bad things come to us, we make all sorts of beliefs and views as to why I don't deserve, or my suffering is not justified. We have all sorts of thoughts and views which are based on our conditioning, and our speech is based on how to get, finding ways to get the things which bring us pleasure, or how to remove the things which bring us displeasure, when we see other people and we experiencing happiness and we feel jealous or upset because they got better than we did, or we want the things that they have, we try to find ways to disparage them, say bad things about them and hurt them, because we want what they have. We want them to not have their position or their wealth or their status. And so we say and even do things which are often purely based on our desires and our aversions. We're chasing after sensual desires, chasing after objects of pleasure, running away, chasing away, fighting off all the time things which are displeasing. So we find ourselves not really free, no matter how much we say we should be free, that no one should tell us how to act, how to speak, how to think. And so in fact we see this is exactly what the Lord Buddha did, is taught us how we should act, how we should speak, and how we should even think. He explained that there were modes of behavior, modes of speech, and modes of thought which were unhelpful, which were wrong, which should be abandoned. The Lord Buddha taught, of course, freedom from, which is freedom from evil, freedom from suffering, freedom from defilement. And if we look at it, we can see this is a much more worthy sort of freedom. That really all that all of us want is to be free from any kind of suffering, any kind of upset, any kind of displeasure whatsoever. When we talk about happiness, really what we mean is just to be at peace. We don't ever, most of us think that we have to experience extreme states of pleasure all the time. We simply wish that we should not have to face unpleasantness, pain and aching and upset and frustration and so on. That we should be at we should be able to find some sort of peace and a sort of a constant state of happiness in our lives. So the Lord Buddha taught freedom from suffering. And he explained the reason why people suffer is because, in an essence, they don't understand suffering. They don't understand the cause of suffering. Just like why people suffer from obesity, or people suffer from heart disease, or people suffer from various illnesses, ailments, which really are curable or even preventable. But because people don't understand these diseases, how to treat them, how to cure them, how to act when one is afflicted by this illness, and because they don't understand what caused the illness in the first place, they aren't able to change their lifestyles. You find people suffering from so many various illnesses, unable to get themselves out of the cycle, often simply because they don't understand and they don't see the danger in what they are doing. As far as suffering goes, the Lord Buddha saw that mostly the way we look at suffering is simply as a painful feeling or something temporary which we can remove. We can see only so far as those unpleasant things. We say this is suffering when we receive something unpleasant. And because we can see only so far that it is an occurrence which is visible, we look at suffering as something which arises and is treatable by various means. Because we don't understand that suffering is something which is an intrinsic part of life. Lord Buddha said, this is a reason why we suffer. We chase after all sorts of pleasurable sensations. And whenever pain or suffering comes up, we immediately try to find a way to remove the source of the thing which we dislike. When we see something unpleasant, we run away from it. When we hear something unpleasant, we close our ears. We always find ourselves running away from the cause of suffering. When we have a backache, we get a massage. When we have a headache, we take a pill. When we have a heartache, we take drugs or alcohol. We find ourselves indulging in all sorts of unwholesome behaviors simply because we don't see that suffering is an intrinsic part of life. We look at people who aren't able to understand things like meditation or understand how the mind works, aren't able to understand why someone would want to train their mind. We see them chasing after pleasure, and we can see them performing all sorts of unwholesome deeds, and we see their minds becoming weak, becoming unstable. We see these same people who will tell you how to live for the moment and chase after pleasure in the here and now. We see these same people running out to find therapists and find a masseuse or a chiropractor or a doctor or someone to get rid of their constant ever-present suffering, the onslaught of so many various different kinds of suffering which arise. Even simply sitting still, you see the average person is unable to sit still for any long period of time unless they have a very comfortable, very plush, expensive chair to sit in. And even then you watch them and after some time they become bored, they become restless, and they have to change position. They have to get up and go and chase after more pleasure, and they're really never in a state of peace and happiness. They're unable to sit still, unable to rest, and so their mind keeps chasing and chasing and chasing, and running and running and running. The Lord Buddha taught that in the very end, there's no one who can run away from suffering, there's no person who can run to a place where there is only happiness. In the end, we all have to suffer through old age, sickness, and death, no matter how much happiness or pleasure we might find here and now. In the end, we have to leave it all behind. And then we see old people on their deathbed crying, unable to deal with unpleasantness, unable to deal with the fear and the pain which arises at the moment of death. And it's really shameful to see, because throughout their whole life, they were confronted by these very same sensations, and they kept running and running away from them, seeing that all they had to do was find a doctor or so on, someone who could cure their illness, and then they would be happy again. Never thinking that in the end it would come to defeat them. It would become so strong that there would be no way out. In the end, they would have to face death. So it takes something very special. It takes a very strong sense of understanding, something which has perhaps been developed in lifetime after lifetime after lifetime, for a person to really think beyond the ephemeral, and think beyond the states of happiness which arise and cease incessantly and are none of them really satisfying. Think through to the point where We no longer wish to run after these states of pleasure. And we can see that in the end we have to leave them all behind, and they're really worthless. They don't leave us as better people, happier or more peaceful people. In fact, they create disturbance and upset in our minds. And so to practice meditation. For someone who has come to this point, it's very very special and very hard to find. Something which is very encouraging to see that there are still so many people in this world who are interested and keen on coming to practice meditation. Seeing that these sensual pleasures out there are really not satisfying. And when we come to practice, so then we can really and truly come to see the truth of suffering and the causes of suffering. It starts by seeing the characteristic of suffering. Seeing that every single thing in this world has the characteristic of suffering. There's nothing inside of ourselves or in the world around us which can truly satisfy us. Characteristic of suffering means it is something which cannot bring about satisfaction or contentment. It's not something like we think that it is. We think that everything which we gain is something which we will be able to put up on a mantle or put on our table or put in our room, put in our home, keep as our own, and that will perpetually bring us peace and happiness. In fact, we find precisely the opposite, that the more we get, the more we obtain, the more distracted and distraught and upset our minds become. Always constantly thinking about the next pleasure, constantly worried or afraid of any sort of suffering that might come. Our minds flitting here and there. If you watch, you can see people who are engaged in consumerism. You can see how their minds work just by watching their faces. They're unable to sit still, unable to be at peace with themselves. And no matter how much happiness they might find, you can see that in the end, when suffering overwhelms them, they will be completely at a loss. The same people end up crying and falling into despair when even the slightest unhappiness comes to them. In the end, when old age, sickness, and death come, there's no way that they can possibly hope to deal with it. And when they die with all the defilements and all the upset in their mind, there's no way that they can hope to be free from suffering after they pass away. So when we see that this is the nature of all sankhara, all things which exist in the world, all things which arise, all things which are formed, which come into being based on the laws of nature, the laws of physics, the laws of karma, the law of the mind, the meditator starts to let go. Starts to become bored and uninterested, disenchanted, they say. The mind starts to turn away. Whereas before, the mind was something like sitting on the edge of your seat. Our minds, our hearts are sitting, waiting for the next pleasant sight to jump out at it. When we see a beautiful person, someone who is the object of our desire, right away the mind leaps out. When we smell good food, right away our mouth starts to water. When we taste something, some good food, right away our minds perk up, jumping out, savoring the taste, waiting for the next taste, eating more, eating quicker, and get more taste, more of the good taste. When we start to think pleasant thoughts, our mind jumps out at them. When the meditator starts to practice and sees this jumping of the mind, which is not at peace, which is not happy, which is not in any way wholesome or beneficial, the meditator starts to become bored, starts to see as well that this is not under our control. Once we establish this and develop it, It's not something we can then control and turn off or on as we wish. It's something which then envelops us, like a great fire. It comes to burn our whole being, and something we cannot, a fire we cannot easily put out. And so, like a person whose house is on fire, we become disenchanted and start to say, this house is really no longer worth protecting. The fire has completely enveloped the house. And the meditator starts to loosen their grip on the body and the mind and even the whole world around. The mind starts to let go. So when we see good things or see bad things, the mind is not leaping out anymore. When we hear good things, hear bad things, we don't like what someone says, we don't like what someone does, we think this is a bad person, that is a bad person, mean people, unfair, or so on. And we feel like this, when we practice, we start to lose these sort of feelings. Our mind starts to become at peace. We feel like this upset or this anger or this fear or boredom or desire, which we used to carry around like a flag, it starts to become a burden. Something which we no longer want, we no longer wish for. And we start to let go and give up. This is the benefit of the practice. This is how we attain freedom. Because freedom from suffering is not something that another person can take from you or give to you. Not like freedom to do this or do that. People can take this from you. People can even take your freedom to think, if they're clever enough. But no one can take away or give you freedom from suffering. It's something which comes to us at the time when we let go. At the time when we see impermanence, at the time when we see suffering, at the time when we're walking and sitting, when we're saying to ourselves, rising and falling, and the mind is seeing clearly the nature of the things inside of us and around us. This is how we attain what we call freedom from suffering. It comes by seeing the truth of suffering, that there's really no one holding on to us or holding us down, no one keeping us in suffering. This sort of freedom is something which comes when we ourselves let go, when we ourselves cease to hold on, cease to attach, cease to chase after. We ourselves are binding ourselves, imprisoning ourselves. And when we see this, when we see that the cause of our suffering is our own minds, this is called the freedom from suffering. This is the truth of suffering, seeing the truth of suffering. Seeing the cause of suffering and abandoning the cause means letting go. At the moment when the mind turns away, and finally completely abandons attachment. This is called the freedom from suffering. And so freedom in this sense is also not something which requires that we go anywhere or leave the world or become anything. It's a freedom which we can obtain even when living in the world, or we can carry with us even living in the world, that no one can take away from us. Because we see the things we see, we hear, we smell, we taste, these things cannot really make us suffer. It is only our own craving which can bring about suffering. The cause of suffering is not unpleasant sights or sounds or smells or tastes or feelings or thoughts. The cause of suffering is attachment. So we can live simply as we have been living, only without any sort of craving or aversion to the objects of the sense. This is what the Lord Buddha called freedom. When we practice meditation, we're looking for at least a small taste of freedom. And we hope that all of the meditators who come to practice with us should be able to obtain at least a small taste of freedom. And if they continue to practice, we can expect that once they are able to attain what they know for themselves is the right path, and are able to say for themselves without anyone else convincing them or coercing them, once they can say that this or that is the right path, we can expect that they continue on that path, that they should not only be able to taste freedom, but in the end be able to become completely free. This is the goal which the Lord Buddha had for his meditators, his followers. And this is the goal which we present to our meditators, saying only we expect that you should gain a taste of freedom. Once you have obtained a taste of freedom, it's up to you to look inside yourself and see whether you know for yourself that this path leads to freedom. Once you have tasted freedom, we expect and we can observe that the meditators who have genuinely tasted freedom, that they are then able to say for themselves that they have found the right path. They have found the path which leads to complete freedom. The path which will lead them in this very life without leaving the world, without going anywhere, being anything, will lead them to complete freedom from suffering, based on their own practice and their own dedication to the practice. So this is the Lord Buddha's teaching on what it means to be free. And this is the Dhamma which I give today.